of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can't put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We're underway this hour on the program with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. It is Thursday, January 9th, and this hour of Flames Talk, we welcome you to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. It is a Thursday, and we always enjoy catching up with our goaltending expert, Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine. He joins us on Thursdays here on Flames Talk, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Woodley, welcome back to the mainland. How are we doing?
We're doing good. We're missing the sunshine, I'm going to be honest, but we're doing good.
There's always next time, right? There's always...
There is. And I had, you know what I had this week? I had the PWHL in town to brighten my day. More fans of that game last night than the Canucks have sold to any single game. And it might surprise people in Calgary to know the Canucks only have one sellout this entire season. So, yeah, really good vibe in there. Obviously, it's easier when you've got lower price seats and a lot of kids. But it was just a really good event and some really good hockey. And from the goaltending side, some exceptional goaltending. I know Kristen Campbell pretty well. Spent some time in the summers with her, watching her train on and off the ice. And then anytime you get a chance to watch Anne-Renée Debien stop pucks, just watching her practice too. Her movement's so powerful, so precise. It's a real treat.
Well, and all the visuals looked awesome, by the way, from that earlier this week. We've got some Flames goaltending to get into with you, and we definitely will. Maybe the place that we have to start, though, and there's people buzzing in this market about it because it's, a number one center might be available. Like, what's happening? Vancouver, we talked to you about the JT Miller and Elias Pettersson reported drama last week. But, like, do you see a world, Kev? You cover this team for NHL.com. You know him pretty well. Like, do you see a world where Elias Pettersson actually gets dealt here? Is this something that teams around the league or fans around the league could actually be looking forward to?
Well, I mean, their general manager, I mean, this is what's kind of put it back on the front burner. It was their general manager told Ian McIntyre that, you know, everything's possible. I can't remember the exact quote, but essentially said that it's not off the table. And as I said to you last week, I know a lot of the focus is on that relationship, and it's never been the strongest. We didn't hear much about it when things were going well last year. But I do wonder how much of this is also the Canucks at least contemplating the concept of buyer's remorse on the Pettersson extension. Not saying they're there all the way there. But when you look at the disappearing act in the playoffs, you know, and I had someone in that room that was in that room during the playoffs say, like, there were times you looked and guys looked and asked each other, like, is he even trying? Like, that was one of the things that sort of came out of that playoff. Like, it was a pretty tough performance. You've committed a lot. Comes into this season. I don't think there were people in the organization that definitely didn't love the, you know, blaming it on the knee, fair or not, as other guys were refusing to talk about injuries. And I personally think that's silly. If you're hurt, just talk about it, as Pettersson did. But I heard there were some pushback on that, or some people that weren't happy about that. He was the only one that did. And there were guys that were clearly injured and playing through it that refused to divulge or use it as an excuse. Then you come into this season and it was kind of more of the same. You know, got going a little bit with Nebraska. And then, you know, the 15 points in 10 games when JT is out, obviously, again, sparked a lot of the conversation. But at the end of the day, they have a window here before July 1st to make this move before the no move protection kicks in. And that may be what this is about as much as anything. Whether they do or don't, I think, in part, that's going to depend on the offer. But it's pretty clear from the reporting, not me, but by many others and a lot more insiders with a lot more insights and a lot more connections to people that would know, that they've at least considered it, that they've at least gone out and seen what that market looks like for Elias Pettersson. So to say it's not going to happen, I think at this point, might be a little naive. Whether they would quickly come to regret it or not, like, that's the thing, right? Like, in the bubble, and I know that wasn't real playoff hockey, and there was no fans in the atmosphere, and there were teams that just didn't want to be there, including the team the Canucks beat in the St. Louis Blues.
Indeed.
But, you know, he was really good in that playoffs, and obviously disappeared in last year's playoffs. The challenge is, if you think there's a chance he disappears again, and you hold on to him and then try and make this move in the summer, how much lower is the value given the price of the contract? And if you don't, and you find out he can still get to be that guy he was during the bubble, oh boy, because he was dominant. He was exceptional. And the talent is undoubtable. And the other part, and this is the JT Miller or Elias Pettersson underlying discussion, is Pettersson comes with a floor that is borderline Selke-level defensive play. For all the attention that goes to his offense or lack thereof in the playoffs, and the struggles offensively at times this season, even when he's not playing well, he defends at an exceptional level. He's the only guy on this team, forward-wise, that's able to be above-water possession-wise and chance generation-wise when he's not on the ice with Quinn Hughes. This is a team that is essentially what they play like with Quinn Hughes on the ice and what they play like without him. And he's the only guy among the forwards that can hold water when he's not on the ice with Quinn Hughes. And JT Miller very much does not. And so, you know, in terms of who's the better player, I don't think there's any question. In terms of who's more likely to be moved, I don't have the answer. Maybe it's none. But it the more this conversation seems to pick up steam around the league, I mean, it must lead every broadcast, it feels like, every podcast, everybody's adding a new tidbit to it, and I don't have any new tidbits to add. Just sort of what I've seen, and that's that there is a risk in making that move given the talent, but if you don't believe you're going to get that talent when it matters the most, maybe it's a risk they take.
Kevin, there's a couple of recent examples in Jack Eichel and Matthew Tkachuk of moving players of a certain talent level at a certain age, and then, you know, looking back and saying, well, how could you have expected team such and such, the Sabres or the Flames, to win that trade? How can you win a trade when that's the guy you're moving? Do you think Elias Pettersson ends up in that same conversation if he's moved?
Could very well. Like, and that's the risk, right? Like, the talent's undeniable, right? Like, it really is. And it's frustrating at times when we don't see it. It's frustrating at times. Yeah, the interesting thing is, like, I think he's dug in physically this year a little more. Yeah, does he get knocked off the puck sometimes? Absolutely. Yeah, is he long? Like, he's filled out. He's done the work in the offseason. He's not brutish. He's not huge. He never will be. He's long. And he skates upright. And so there are times that he ends up getting knocked off pucks. And there are times, because he gets off balance in an attempt to generate or in an attempt to make moves, where he's susceptible to that. And so it looks, I don't want to use the word soft, but it looks like he's getting knocked down easy. I don't know that it's always fair. I actually think he's brought a fairly, especially on the defensive end, like he's engaged physically for large portions of this season. Again, the floor he has in terms of what he brings when he's not contributing offensively is so much higher than the other guy. And so, but when you make that ticket 11.6, fifth highest in the in the league, fifth highest salary in the league, and the richest contract in the history of the team, you expect the other stuff too. And, you know, again, we discussed it last week, like JT Miller goes out of the lineup and he gets 15 points in 10 games. And how much of that is just, hey, he's the only guy that can move the needle or hold water without Quinn Hughes. And so we trust him to be on the ice without Quinn. And when JT was out, he got some of those minutes with Quinn, and that's when the offensive production kicked in.
Yeah.
This team needs to solve, and maybe hope, I think in their mind, maybe needs to solve it before they make this decision. They need to solve how different they are when Quinn Hughes isn't on the ice. They need to figure out the bottom two pairings. It can't just be with Quinn and without Quinn, because that's what it's been this season.
Kevin Woodley is with us. He is our goaltending expert. He joins us from In Goal Magazine, also NHL.com in Vancouver. Let's talk a little Flames goaltending, Kev, because it has been one of the biggest talking points in this market all year long. And this week, Devin Cooley gets named to the AHL All-Star Game. He's having a stellar year with the Wranglers. And has to be some nice validation if you're the Flames that year one for Cooley, and here he is. He's an American League All-Star.
Yeah, I mean, you know, absolutely. And are we shocked? No. At the level he's playing at, like, I don't know if anybody called that. Like, you know, there could be another Goalie of the Year award coming for the Calgary Flames organization, right? Would that be three in the American Hockey League in the last 4 years?
Yeah.
You know, like, that's something to hang your hat on. And for Jordan Sigalette and his team with Jason LaBarbera and now Mackenzie Skapski in the American League, Thomas Spear before him for the first of those, just what a job they do as a group. And you've heard me praise that before. It's validation. It's a continuation of what we saw last year. Took a massive step, ironically, with Thomas Spear in San Jose, and yet another step here with Calgary. And so, late bloomer in every sense of the word, a guy who will tell you that a lot of the things that he's doing now and last year were new to him. And this is, you know, we always hear that goalies take longer. And sometimes I think sometimes goalies take longer to find a voice that clicks. And he's found that. And the tools are there. They've always been there. They're just being deployed. And, you know, last year with San Jose, it was more the biomechanics, the tracking, how he moved, being more efficient. And then this year in Calgary, you take all that, you reinforce it further, and you change where he plays. You change his game management, his tactics. He's so much more contained. He's such a big body. He's really explosive for the size. Like, he's really dynamic. But that in past tend to just, he would overuse it and get over aggressive and put himself out of position. Like, he's almost never out of position now. And so you add all those elements together. He's having a hell of a season. It's well-deserved. He's worked hard. No secret, he's a great kid, great interview, great for us in the media, the kind of person that you get behind once you've had a chance to talk to him even once. And, you know, just had an opportunity here to continue building. And good for the Flames for recognizing that they saw something and they're continuing to work with it and give themselves a guy who, whether it's this year or next, looks very much like he's trending towards being a National Hockey League goaltender.
So here's kind of the narrative in this market. I don't think this would surprise you, but you've got Devin Cooley doing what he's doing in the American League. You've got Dustin Wolf, who is the supposed goalie of the future, and I think we all believe that. I know Wes and I are certainly on that page about this guy being the clear goalie of the future. We know how highly you think of Dustin. And then you've got Dan Vladar, who's a pending unrestricted free agent, and many who are of the opinion that, hey, you know, like, why not move off Vladar, and why not give Cooley the opportunity to be in the NHL? And the only thing that I keep saying when people bring that up is, well, Dustin Wolf has had this safety net of such when it comes to Dan Vladar this year, some of the starts he's taken, so on and so forth, and a guy with a little bit more NHL playing experience. What would be the potential risk of, you know, putting Cooley into this tandem and not having Vladar anymore? Like, how important could that safety net, is that safety net potentially for a guy like Wolf?
Somebody's got to take the tough starts, right? And that's what you lose. I was looking at the adjusted save percentage and expected save percentages today at ClearSight before we came on. And, you know, I talked earlier about how good the Flames were in that first month of the season defensively and how it's dropped off a little bit since then. Been a little more in and out of late, but very much the first month of the second month were like two different seasons in terms of the environment in front of the goaltenders. Dan Vladar's expected save percentage, so basically what you expect the average NHL goalie to stop based on the quality of shots they've faced since mid-November, is .868. It's the third lowest in the National Hockey League. Only Sam Harrison and Alexei Kolosov in Philadelphia have a lower expected save percentage. Now, he's underperformed it by 1%, which isn't great, but it's also not terrible. Because normally when it's that low, it's really hard to keep your head above water when the environment is that tough. And that's what you lose. You lose a guy who you can put into those games. I hesitate to say firing squad, but like basically give him, you know, a blindfold and a cigarette and know that you're not going to sacrifice his confidence necessarily because he's got enough, you know, he's got enough experience. You're not worried about losing him.
Yeah.
And I saw it in Buffalo, right? We saw him in Buffalo. We talked about Eric Comrie and look what he's done in Winnipeg. I know the wins haven't been there, but it hasn't been on him. He's holding water right around expected, playing pretty well this season, a little bit of ups and downs, but looks like an NHL goaltender in Winnipeg. Well, last year everyone was like, oh, he didn't. And went through waivers multiple times, unclaimed. His expected save percentage was .858. And he got the strike. It's like, it was like the Sabres, every time they got into a spot where they knew they were in trouble, whether it was travel or, you know, we know scheduled losses exist in the National Hockey League. You're running into a great team. You played 5-7. You know your team's running out of gas. Throw in Eric Comrie. 858 expected save percentage. Don't show that to UPL. Don't show that to Devon Levi. And Eric Comrie's gone now. And Devon Levi earlier this season got in a bunch of those games, and UPL has been in more of those games. And so that's what you lose. You lose that insulation. Absolutely. You lose somebody that will take those tough starts. That doesn't mean that the other two can't handle it. And that's where you have to be careful about worrying about that too much. Because at the end of the day, Dustin Wolf's expected save percentage since mid-November is .878. So yeah, 10 points higher than Dan Vladar, but also 10 points below league average still, which is around 80. Actually, it's .887 right now. So just not quite 10 points below it. And he's outperformed it to the tune of fifth best in the National Hockey League at almost plus 3% since mid-November. So, you know, the hardest ones, no, but still a pretty tough environment, and he's hung tough. And so you just, it's not fair to assume that they can't handle it. Do they have less experience? They have maybe less time and maturity to deal with the ups and downs, to be able to process it between the ears as much as between the pipes, to not chase change in their game when things don't go well on nights like that. I mean, Devin Cooley's 27 years old, right? He's been around. I think the infrastructure of the coaching staff, we talked about Sigalette and LaBarbera, and Mackenzie Skapski, like, there's enough structure there, I think, to help them through that. But it is the risk that, you know, Dan Vladar's been there, done that, and those two guys haven't done it as much. And can they handle the scar tissue of being the ones that have to get put in on a lot of those nights?
Yeah. Last one kind of related to the Flames, and I know that you have written kind of on this theme recently, Kev. You know, if a team, let's use Vladar in this market or any other goalie. We're now into the new year, and the trade deadline's a little less than 2 months away. And you've talked many times about kind of the difficulty of moving a goaltender or absorbing a new goalie in season, and that the more headway you can get, the more runway you can give a goalie is important if you're going to do it in season. So whether it's Vladar or anybody else, like, if you're looking to move a goalie, are we kind of in that sweet spot right now where it's probably like, okay, you still have enough time, but if you wait too much longer, you might put yourself in a bad spot?
Well, at least in terms of, you know, are they fully comfortable behind your team and the way they play and the individual tendencies? Because systems, they figure out pretty quick. There's only so many differences. It's how individuals react within that system that takes some time to get used to. Some goalies will tell you, Linus Allmark told me for my column, actually tomorrow is on this subject at NHL.com, he told me half a season. Like, it takes time. And we're sort of seeing, you know, what Colorado did, and they're reaping the benefits. Mackenzie Blackwood is great. And a lot of people say, well, hold on, you just said it takes time, and Blackwood's great right out of the gate. Scott Wedgwood has been really good right out of the gate for the Colorado Avalanche. Jonas Korpisalo, when he went to Los Angeles right at the deadline, was great right out of the gate. .921 save percentage for the rest of the regular season. And talking to Blackwood and Korpisalo for this piece, it was the defensive environment. Like, we're talking Colorado top two defensive environment in the National Hockey League for goaltenders. The Kings, when Korpisalo was there, he talked about the 1-3-1 and how predictable everything was, because you always had a guy down low. Even puck handling, you never had to make a play because there was always a guy back to be the first to get it. Just the system lent itself to easy, more predictable, simpler goaltending reads. And Blackwood's going through that in Colorado. He talked actually about the tougher part of the adjustment was he was so busy in San Jose, and we talked about this after the trade, that it would be an adjustment. All the shots he used to see in San Jose, even though a lot of them were from the outside, they kept him in the game. And now in Colorado, they possess the puck so much on the other end. That's a very real adjustment that he's making, and he's making it really well so far. But it's not that way for everyone. And so if you want your guy to be up and running and comfortable and think he's an option for you in the playoffs, or you're going to need him in the playoffs, or he might be your playoff starter sooner rather than later, don't wait to the deadline. By the time you get to the deadline, what? There's most teams have somewhere between 17 and 19 games left. He's going to start maybe, what, 13, 14? That's not enough time. But bringing this back to Calgary, is anybody coming in for Dan Vladar as their number one, or are they looking for more insurance policy type of thing? And so that's where I don't know if there's any pressure on that type of a deal for the Flames, but certainly if you're an acquiring team, sooner rather than later, that's the message I got from all those goalies I talked to for the column that's at NHL Tomorrow.
We're chatting with Kevin Woodley. He's our goaltending expert from In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, here on Flames Talk on this Thursday, Wes.
Kevin, at 17-2-2 now on the season, are we talking enough? Are we giving enough respect to Calgary kid Logan Thompson?
Well, probably not. What's that contract going to look like? Like, he's playing himself into a pretty good spot as a pending UFA, making league minimum right now, isn't he? The adjusted numbers are as good as what the numbers you just cited there. He is now up to plus 3.3% on the year, which is, sorry, that was since mid-November because I hadn't removed that filter I had for the Flames, but it's like he's in that top five in the National Hockey League on the season. He's actually plus 2.9% for the entire season. Only Anthony Stolarz has a better adjusted save percentage than Logan Thompson. And we are well past, you know, we're into the midway point of the year. This doesn't look like a fluke. The game he played against Vancouver, you know, the Canucks, for all everything I just said about some of their struggles of late, they got one regulation win in their past 10. They played well last night, and they controlled a lot of play, and they put a lot of pucks on the net, and they're a pretty good team around the net, and he made a number of really great saves. So not only are we not talking enough about him probably overall and the season he's having and what this could mean for him in the future, for a guy who, by the way, is a U Sports grad, right? Like, we're not that far removed from him being at Brock University, right? Like, undrafted, in Canadian university playing. And I don't think it's a coincidence this is happening in Washington, because they were the team that initially signed him in the ECHL. And Scott Murray, their goalie coach, was a part of that process. He started his pro career with, I believe, the Charlotte Stingrays or some South Carolina Stingrays, it might have been.
South Carolina.
In their system. There you go. So this is a really good story. And the only part of it that might become a little regrettable as he continues to play so, so well is, why isn't he a part of Team Canada at the Four Nations? And again, I didn't expect him to be for the reasons I outlined. It didn't always go well in Vegas. Performance was fine, but in terms of some of their thoughts on some of the habits, and two of those coaches are a part of this Canadian. So I didn't expect him to get picked, and he didn't. But that doesn't mean they won't regret it. And the way he's playing right now, that's very much a possibility.
Last one for you, Kevin, and amazing stuff as always. It's January, which means that there's John Gibson trade rumors floating around. Is this the year?
Man, if there ever was a year, he has earned the look. He right now is fifth in the National Hockey League in adjusted save percentage. For all the hype that came with Lucas Dostal at the beginning of the season, he's still having a hell of a year. Gibson's adjusted numbers are better than Connor Hellebuyck right now from a save percentage perspective relative to the quality of shots he faces. He's fifth in the league. He is playing really, really well, and I would imagine that gives some teams food for thought. Now, there is one statistical portion of his game that continues to plague him. And I think if you're making this move, you either A, well, you have to recognize it, and A, figure out, do we give up this type of scoring chance? Because if we do, this is a problem. Or B, can we make some adjustments in his game to fix this? And I would hedge towards A, because a big part of the success he's had is that they haven't made him too technical. They've allowed him, he's got so much natural skill, so much talent, and never taken that away from him by trying to put him into too much of a technical box. And that includes how he plays stuff down low. And on low slot line plays, so pucks that go across the middle of the ice, below the hash marks, below the bottom hash, his numbers, like, he is underwater, has been for a number of years, and he continues to be this year. That's the one statistical thing that even in a year that, you know, frankly, if he does this from now to the end of the season, we're having a conversation about him getting Vezina votes. That's how good he's been statistically. But even within that, it's despite struggling on those types of plays. So if you're making this move, as much as I am dying to see him on a good team and see what would happen. And I think it would be positive. That's my hunch. But thank goodness I don't have to make tons of money and put my career on the line to say that. You do want to be cognizant of that one type of play, that low slot line play, because he's underwater by a pretty significant margin and has been for a number of years on those types of plays. So if you're getting him, you better make sure you either A, don't give those up, or B, you've got a plan to rectify the reason for it in his game.
Great stuff, as always, Kev. We always appreciate the time. Great stuff on Vancouver. Great stuff on the Flames and a whole lot more. We'll do it again next week, my friend. But enjoy the rest of your week. Enjoy your weekend. Thanks for doing this, hey?
Thanks, guys. You too.
He's Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com. He joins us on Thursdays here on Flames Talk, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Barcast Hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is Flames Talk on this Thursday, January 9th. Wes Gilbertson and my name is Pat Steinberg, along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio. So, Wes, I thought this was very neat and something very cool that we got an opportunity to do in late December. So, for instance, as we're talking right now, the NHL has just announced the quarter century team for the Pittsburgh Penguins. That is the latest release.
Did Sid make it?
I haven't checked, but I'm going to check later. I'll confirm whether or not 87 made that group. So here's the deal. Because we're now into the year 2025, and there have been 25 years now of the new century, millennium, whatever. The NHL is doing a quarter century team for all 32 teams, and they're announcing them daily, and they've been doing so since December 31st. And coming up on Saturday, it will be the announcement and release of the Calgary Flames quarter century team. And they've kind of put together a list of, I think it's former players, coaches, managers, and some media members all got the opportunity to put their submissions in and vote on this one. And what they did was ask everybody for six forwards, four defensemen, and two goalies, because they're putting together a first and a second quarter century team. Each team has three forwards, two D, and one goaltender. So Wes and I both made our picks in late December, submitted them to the NHL. Wes and I kind of talked a lot about this because I thought that there were some difficult decisions that needed to be made at the bottom of a couple of lists. Just curious as to how our text line responds and more at 960-960. We might be breaking the rules. I don't know if we're allowed to do that. It's 2 days away. I think the NHL will be fine if we talk about what our votes are.
Yeah. We're going to do it anyways.
Yeah, and I'll take...
We're rebels.
I'm going to pass the buck to Shan if this ends up... Shan will be... I'll just blame Shan.
One of the things that I
won't do that.
Thought was really cool about this project, and a really neat idea from the NHL, and one of my sort of initial reactions when I was sent the email and I was reading through it is, I thought it was really cool that they left the criteria sort of up to the voter. And I think as we jump into who would be on our Flames quarter century team, and just to reiterate what you already said, six forwards, four defensemen, two goaltenders. I think one of the maybe challenges was trying to figure out, okay, well, what's my personal criteria for what this means? Am I more about longevity and loyalty with a guy like Michael Backlund? How do I weigh a guy who had a couple really good seasons but maybe wasn't a Calgary Flame for very long? Like, one of the greatest goal scorers to pass through this organization the last 25 years was Mike Camilleri, but he wasn't around very long. And so I let's get into position by position. But
well, and again, like, one of the top three or four greatest players to ever play the game suited up for the Flames in the last 25 years. But yeah. I don't know if 68 made, like, I don't know if Jaromír Jágr made the team for very many, right?
No, and even, well, let's talk as we go through. But I thought that that was both a neat part of the exercise and also one of the challenges, is it was sort of up to you to decide, okay, you know, are these, am I going with the leading scorers from the past quarter century? Am I going with the guys I enjoyed watching the most? Am I trying to measure impact in another way?
Okay, so how did you do it, Wes?
Well, I certainly valued longevity, and not saying that just being a Calgary Flame for a long time would get you on the quarter century team. But, you know, for example, when I got to the end of my forwards, I was left with two names and I went with the guy who's been here longer. And that wasn't the only consideration, but that was something that I valued. I thought was an important, like Mackenzie Weegar, I'll just say, did not make my quarter century team. And yet Mackenzie Weegar had one of three 20 goal seasons by a Flames defenseman in the past quarter century. Like, so that when I talk about the challenge,
I think two of them didn't make mine.
Right. And
two of those 20
when I talk about the challenge, it's weighing, you know, great individual campaigns versus sort of cumulative totals versus longevity and all that. I'd love to hear what your sort of criteria was.
Mine was very kind of like different. All of these things got weighted slightly differently. High-end performance definitely played a part. You know, I'll give you an example. Weegar, Lindholm, Hanifin, guys like that who weren't here like long, long periods of time, but had Camilleri had really, really good seasons or a couple really good seasons. That made an impact. So did longevity. You know, guys like Giordano and Regier and players like that, and the Michael Backlund, time served made a ton of impact. And so if you could be a high-level guy and have a lot of time served, that really made an impact for me. So those were kind of the things that I really factored in. And I think probably when it was all said and done, when you're talking about time served and talking about kind of the high level performance, if you're one of those people who could do both, I gave the most weight to that. And if it was between the two, I think I generally skewed towards lifetime service as opposed to the high end, but not everybody did. And that's what makes this so interesting. I do know that it would be hard as we get into it a little bit. I do know we can basically put the goaltending conversation to bed right away.
Like, yeah.
Over the last 25 years, there are two, right? There's nobody had anybody other than Mika Kiprusoff at number one, and nobody, I can't imagine anybody beat out Jacob Markstrom at number two. Over the last 25 years, with no disrespect to decent seasons from certain players, Roman Turek or Mike Smith or others who had, you know, decent runs, the two best goaltenders of the last quarter century are Mika Kiprusoff and Jacob Markstrom.
Do you know who's third on the Flames win list in the past 25 years? I'll have to look it up again because I think it's actually tied. But one of the two is David Rittich.
I would not have.
That tells you a lot.
I wouldn't have been guessing David Rittich.
So one of the projects we did at Post Media.
Did you know that David Rittich is eighth all time
in Flames wins?
Flames wins. Wow.
And so who?
Did not know that.
Who's right there with him? Because that'd be the other. Is Kari Rammo?
So number nine is Turek. Turek and Rittich are tied.
Are tied. Okay. Yeah. So one of the projects we did at Post Media was we have a poll online, and I'd encourage you to go check it out on the Herald or Sun website. We have a quarter century team poll where you can cast your votes. And what I did was comb through the roster and came up with twice as many candidates as spots. So 12 forwards, 8 defensemen, 4 goalies. And I'll tell you, coming up with a third and fourth goalie was a chore.
Who did you go with? Smith?
Nope. Rittich, no, and Rittich and Turek. Yeah. I mean, I didn't overthink it because there's two guys who are going to be 1-2. Yeah. One of the things, and
no knock on Jacob, but like, how can you, like, Mika Kiprusoff was one on every ballot.
Yeah.
And Markstrom was probably 2 on every
ballot. Yeah, like, you know, Jacob Markstrom's best season, he was a runner-up for a Vezina. Well, Mika Kiprusoff won a Vezina. Jacob Markstrom's best season, he almost tied Mika Kiprusoff's franchise record for shutouts. Well, Mika Kiprusoff still has the record. Mika Kiprusoff won 300 and some games in the 2000s for the Flames. Markstrom's the only other guy who hit 100, but you just can't manufacture a debate here.
No. Then we can probably move on.
All right, let's move on.
Okay. You want to go? Do you want to go first? Or you want me to go first on defense?
Why don't I go first? Because I want to hear your explanation of one that you left off.
Okay, and so we did this in order. The first guy we sent in was our like top guy, and he would get the most votes, and then all the way down to the fourth guy that we submitted.
Let's do this. Let's just run through names. I'll give my four. You give yours, and then we can discuss a little.
Okay.
Giordano.
Yep.
Regier.
Yep.
Phaneuf.
Yep.
Anderson.
So we have three of the same, but we are, and here's where I say, lifetime service, consistency, longevity definitely played a part. Our top two are the same in order. I've got Giordano one. I don't think that one's tough to debate. I've got Regier two. I don't know how you can have a debate. I don't know how anybody in their right mind couldn't have Robin Regier on there. On like Robin Regier is one of the top games played players in franchise history. Yeah. He's number four at 826.
Yeah.
I think all of 20, 25 of those games weren't played in the quarter century.
The only person who didn't vote for Robin Regier was Alish Hemsky.
Yes. Alish Hemsky
still harbors a grudge.
If he did have a vote, I can tell you that Regier would either be one or not on the list from Hemsky, depending on how Alish Hemsky deals with things. But, I mean, Robin Regier was the preeminent shutdown defenseman of his era.
Yeah.
One of the hardest players. They don't get to Game 7 without Regier being the absolute beast he is in 04.
Yeah.
And whether he was playing with Leopold, whether he was playing with Acoin. What did Adrian Acoin coined them? The Tunnel of Death? Him and Regier, like you don't have the success the Flames had kind of in the middle of that kind of that 04 to 09 stretch. You just don't have it without Robin Regier, one of the best D-men to ever play for the Flames. So he's on that list. Giordano one.
No arguments for me. Yeah. Three.
I have Anderson three.
Okay.
And I have Brody four.
Okay.
And again, TJ Brody comes in number 10 all time in terms of games played with the Flames. He played all 634 of those games with the Flames in the quarter century. And I want to say for two-thirds of that time, TJ Brody was one of the most important players on the team. The pairing that he made with Mark Giordano for a number of years was expert level. It was clearly their top pairing. His ability to play minutes, his ability to play against top players, decent offensive numbers at times. I know TJ Brody was a guy that was a little bit more unassuming, was never a giant physical player, and at times could get himself in defensive trouble. But you play 634 games in the minutes that TJ played. I had him as my number four, just beating out. Phaneuf was in the mix, but Phaneuf started so hot and then tailed off. And I just didn't love the entire body of work of Dion as a member of the Flames. But he was a Norris Trophy finalist and a Calder Trophy finalist during that time. So it was hard not to consider him. He was my number five. And I also gave consideration to Mackenzie Weegar, who has had two really damn good seasons as a member of the Flames. I gave consideration to Jay Bouwmeester, who I think is criminally underrated in his time as a member of the Flames. And I thought hard about Corey Sarich because he did a lot of good things for this Flames organization. But in the end, I went in order, Gio, Regier, Anderson, Brody, and that fourth one was a real... I spent a lot of time going back and forth on that.
The one thing I'll add to sort of bolster your case on Brody is if you do want to just look at point production, he was second to Giordano among Flames in that 25-year span. And so that's another reason that warrants him being included. I'll tell you why I had Phaneuf on my team, and I know not everyone's going to. I know that there were some defensive adventures there at times. One of the things, in addition to just being a bona fide star, one of the things that I really took into consideration was some of the hardware, right? Like the trophy nominations and even all-star selections. Like those show if you were kind of on that radar as one of the best in the league that year. And Dion, in his short-ish time in Calgary, was a Calder Trophy finalist, was a Norris Trophy finalist, and was a two-time all-star. Like Dion, during his time, was a legitimate star in Calgary, and that's why I shaded him over a guy like
that's
Brody.
Very fair.
I don't think,
and that was my biggest debate. That was my biggest debate was Phaneuf and Brody.
Was a supporting guy, right?
Yeah.
And I do know just from conversations in the press box that a lot of people considered Chris Tanev as well as good of a teammate.
Actually, I did consider selfless
as a defenseman as there's been through this city, and so. But that's why ultimately I went Phaneuf over Brody over Bo. I went and looked at minutes played. Bo Meester played 26, averaged 26 minutes a night in Calgary, which is absurd. I still couldn't find a spot for him on my team, but that's why I went Phaneuf.
It's very fair because those first 3 years, dude was a rock star in this city. And it tailed off very quickly. It went from burning hot to burning to being pretty ice cold real quick. But you're right, Dion was a rock star when he broke into this league with the Flames, and that's why I considered him so heavily. And I did omit in my honorable mentions or guys that I considered, Chris Tanev and Noah Hanifin both got a lot of consideration, but again, didn't end up making that list. So our D, almost the same.
Yeah.
I have Anderson slightly ahead of where you have him, which I'm surprised Anderson wasn't your number one goalie and forward as well. But
yeah, I am a Rasmus Anderson fan. Somebody was lighting me up on social media for saying they shouldn't trade Rasmus Anderson. Like somebody must have listened to the pod about 5 hours late last night and just needed to get some things off their chest.
What Twitter user was it?
I don't even remember.
Because if it's the I see them all too.
And I'm not even taking shots at, you know, I love the debate. I'm not known to get into a lot of banter on social media, but if you need to get something off your chest, hey. At Wes Gilbertson, go for it. But I'm a Rasmus Anderson fan. I think that's pretty well known.
Give me your forwards. We had six. Do you want me to go first?
I hit lead off last time, so why don't you go?
Okay, so my six forwards in order were Jerome Iginla 1.
Hang on.
I know. Controversial. Very controversial.
Okay, well, keep going.
So Iggy 1, Johnny Gaudreau 2. I had Sean Monahan 3. I had Matthew Tkachuk 4. I had Michael Backlund 5, and number 6 was, it was a debate, and I had a lot of guys in this mix. In the end, I shaded number 6 due to some longevity, some pretty high-end play, and that 04 Cup run definitely made a little bit of an impact, too. My number 6 guy was Craig Conroy. So, and you know what? He's also been with the organization throughout the entire quarter century, basically. Conroy ended up making the list.
You don't need to justify that one for me. And mine's very similar. I had Jerome Iginla number 1.
Controversy.
Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Michael Backlund was my 4th on the list, Matthew Tkachuk 5th, Craig Conroy 6th.
So now, we have the same 6.
Now, Matthew Tkachuk, you know, if Michael Backlund's listening right now, he'll agree with this. Matthew Tkachuk's better. A more star production, elite level player than Michael Backlund, but Michael Backlund playing 1,000+ games, being the captain, all those things he's meant to the franchise. That's why I had him further up the list.
It was
Who was your last cut?
Last cut was there were two that were right there.
Okay,
basically even Elias Lindholm. And Damon Lankow, who are basically the same player anyway. And I've got so much appreciation for the way Lindholm played as a member of the Flames. And I have so much appreciation for what Damon Lankow was as a member of the Flames. I mean, Damon Lankow is one of the most productive centers they've had on a kind of single season basis since Joe Nieuwendyk left. Lankow had that 77-point season in 06-07, followed it up with 65 points. I mean, other than Lindholm, who's a center that's put up points like that since Nieuwendyk's left? Nobody. So Lankow did a lot of that with Jerome on his wing, especially in 06-07. But, Yeah, Lanco and Lindholm were my two last cuts, and both guys, extremely high-end two-way guys, so strong defensively, chipped in big-time offensively, were parts of very important lines, but they just missed out when it came to the final cut.
Craig Conroy, who made your team, is going to be disappointed that he had 75 points 1 year, and you didn't even put him on that list.
That's a good point. He did have a good year.
Yeah. You just...
Well, he didn't have 77. I was still correct.
No. Yeah, you're right about that. The other one, yeah,
two more points, Conroy.
I had Elias Lindholm certainly kind of right down to the wire. One of the reasons being, and similar reason to having Craig Conroy on, mine was the Selke nomination. Lindholm was also just on that dynamite line. Obviously, his both cumulative and those single season stats were pretty impressive. The other guy, if he was just around a little longer, I think I would have had to find a way to have him on my team, is Alex Tanque. Essentially played 4.5 seasons with the Flames.
Really productive years.
And outside of Johnny, there has not been a better passer through the organization in the last 25 years. Like, there has not been a better setup man. I went and looked at different per game rates, assists per game. He's second to only Johnny. I really did consider Alex Tanque, partially just because of the eye test too. Just a fun guy to watch, a guy who had a massive impact, but ultimately couldn't get him on.
Did Huselius enter the conversation for you at all? Didn't play a lot, but he had two really productive seasons. He had the 77-point year and the 66-point year. Again,
I'll tell you, when I trimmed it to 12 for our post-media poll, he was the last guy I didn't get in the 12.
Okay.
So not really.
So he was just on the outside of your top 12.
Yeah. The other names I had on that poll would have been, beyond the six that I had on my list, it would have been Lindholm, Camilleri, Lankau, Tanque, Hudler, and Nazem Kadri.
You had Hudler ahead of Huselius, eh?
Yeah.
Hudler had a couple really good years, too.
Numbers pretty similar-ish. One of the things I looked at with Hudler is he was twice the leading scorer on the team, which is something that I put some weight in. Like, he put up numbers with nobody around him in that first season, obviously. An integral part of that line with the two kids and, on that find a way Flames team. So I had him on the,
right on the cusp.
I didn't legitimately consider him for the team, but I had him a little further down the list.
Monahan, by the way, made it at number three, didn't have quite the same, point totals in a single season than Johnny did, or than Matthew did, but did have the 82 point year. He played center for his entire time as a member of the Flames. He had the 230 goal seasons. I mean, Sean and Sean Monahan started something here that it'll always weigh very heavily. He started a new era and started kind of a hope for what comes next after Jerome and Mika were no longer here. Sean Monahan was their first round pick since all of that turnover happened, and immediately started rewarding them.
Yeah.
So Sean made it at number three, because there's no Iginla, Johnny are going to be the two for everybody. But then who's that number three guy? Monahan's longevity as a member of the Flames, the sacrifice he put in, the bionic limbs that he was playing with at times.
Yeah.
Monahan will always have a real special part in this team's lore, I think.
I'll just add one thing on Monahan, that probably his most impressive stat from his time with the Flames, like almost one quarter of his goals were game winners. He scored 212 goals for the Flames. That is second, by the way, to Iginla in the 2000s so far. 212, 47 of those were game winners. That's pretty damn impressive.
Sure is. Well, the official quarter century team comes out via the NHL this weekend on Saturday. Curious to see how the final ones kind of end up shaking out compared to what you and I submitted in late December. A lot of fun, and I wanted to make sure, really wanted to make sure we spent some time, a little bit of time on it, because it is a fun topic. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Shan Cam, our producers this hour on Flames Talk, and this hour is the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution.